9.91 inches and holding steady. Right now, 66 degrees.
WILL programs are made possible by Hendrick House at Green and Lincoln, three blocks from the Engineering Quad. Hendrick House Catering can tailor a menu and price for events from corporate box lunches to weddings, business meetings, and other special events. More information is available at 365-8004.
It's 1240. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. I'm Craig Cohen. Our technical director is Kyle Mabry. One marker of the economic slowdown in Champaign-Urbana was when the big development projects stopped. Development has never completely stopped in Champaign-Urbana, but announcements of the really big projects, ones that expand the borders of the two cities, pretty much came to an end with the bursting of the housing bubble. Could those sort of development projects return to Champaign-Urbana, and what would it take to make them possible? Illinois Public Media's Jim Meadows explores the issue.
It's a pleasant day at Clearview, the Atkins Group's mixed-use development sites on the northwest edge of Champaign. Perhaps you've seen the signs advertising Clearview from the interstate. The development covers more than 500 acres, dominated by Legacy Drive, where I'm standing now. It's a long, curving street, its infrastructure fully installed right down to the electrical transformers. This week, Clearview was added to a list of land parcels the Champaign School District is considering as a site for a new high school. Any high school would have plenty of room to stretch out, because more than 5 years after its launch, Clearview still has no buildings.
Clearview, you know, was based on the concept of some major new employers. The infrastructure is all in place and ready to go, but I don't think there's been companies making the leap to build big new facilities.
That's Champaign City Planning Director Bruce Knight. He and other local officials are quick to note that compared to the worst years of the recession, new development in Champaign-Urbana is actually on the rise, from new single-family homes and apartment buildings to a new hotel going up in downtown Champaign. But they say the new construction now is nothing like the phenomenal growth that Champaign-Urbana saw in the pre-recession years, when the land area and population of both cities increased by double-digit percentage points. Urbana's community development director, Libby Tyler, thinks more new development is coming, but not at that level.
But we may not see that point in time where we had all the cranes on the horizon, you know, six or eight in the two cities. That was probably an historic moment when that occurred.
That was around 2006 and 2007. And Tyler says she'd be happy to see the more modest growth levels of 2003 and 2004. But how to get there? How could Champaign-Urbana set the stage for a revival of that level of new development? John Dimmitt has just retired after a stint as president of the Champaign County Economic Development Corporation. He says the most visible construction projects, housing and retail stores, rely on bringing or creating new jobs in the area, jobs that bring in new people and new income.
Once that occurs, then there'll be the demand for additional retail outlets. There'll be the demand for additional restaurants, additional services. And, you know, it begins to feed upon itself. It's that multiplier effect that for every base job that we create, creates three to as many as six others in the community.
Meanwhile, local developer Peter Fox says those new jobs need to pay well enough so that employees can afford to buy new homes and support new retail outlets. Fox says he's tried to attract those jobs through his work with the Atkins Group in developing the University of Illinois Research Park. But only about 1,600 people work at the research park right now. Fox says his goal is closer to 5,000.
You know, you have, what, 4,000 to 5,000 students over in the College of Engineering. Virtually every one of those students each year will be offered a job that pays double to triple what the average wage is in Champaign-Urbana. If we could find a mechanism to retain, you know, a third of those each year, that would make a huge difference.
Fox says the college towns he's seen that have succeeded in growing the jobs that spur new development are areas with strong political leadership. Often, he says, they're metro areas where city and county government are merged into a single entity, something which doesn't exist in Champaign-Urbana. Fox hopes that the University of Illinois could fill the void.
if the chancellor or the president would remain in place for a decade and would put the full resources of the university behind an effort that made sense, we could attract another 5,000 jobs very easily.
If the number of new jobs has fluctuated in Champaign-Urbana over the years, the number of students at the University of Illinois has continued to grow. And that means student housing has been relatively immune from the cutback in new development projects. But again, they're not the sort of projects that expand Champaign-Urbana boundaries. Instead, several apartment buildings, a couple with more than 20 stories, have been built close to the U of I campus in recent years. JSM Management owns several of those buildings. Their director of development, Jill Guth, says other developers have built student housing farther away, but she says those developers don't really know the territory.
Some of these outside companies, you know, have seen success in that model of remote apartments in other communities like Austin, Texas, and tried to do that here, and it just has not worked here. Our students that live with us have said they want to live as close to the campus as they can, as close to the campus town area where you have all the restaurants and bars and shops and all those kinds of things.
So the new development in Champaign-Urbana nowadays may be big, but not super big. They include this construction project north of the Marketplace Mall, Hunter's Pond, a townhouse apartment complex already occupied but with new units being built. Champaign-Urbana is not seeing much in this way of boundary-expanding multi-acre developments, but local officials say every project helps. I'm Jim Meadows, Illinois Public Media.
When college students contact their parents, they're not always asking for money. NPR's Rima Kreis tells us about how communications technology is changing the relationship involving parents, students, and universities.
From breakfast to bedtime, college sophomore Julia Scott Dawson and her mom, Robin, exchange a flurry of texts. Things like,
how did that appointment go?
How was class?
What's going on with your sorority sisters?
How's it going?
Love you.
And when she's not texting, Julia Scott visits mom and dad at home, just a 15-minute drive from her dorm at the University of North Carolina. Every Sunday, they share a meal.
We'll set some plates here and put salad out.
Weekly coffee dates are also a parent-daughter ritual for the Dawsons. Julia Scott says they use the time to talk about things like her sorority, classes, or...
like things with boys, if that's happening. Like pretty much everything.
So how often do they talk?
Not all the time, but like I talk to you like every day.
Every day.
Okay, Julia Scott and her parents are really close. But that's nothing too unusual. According to research conducted by Middlebury College professor Barbara Hoffer, college students communicate about twice a day with their parents.
When I went to school back in the dark ages, your parents dropped you off at the curb. You went in, you unpacked. The phone was at the end of the hallway. Things have changed.
That's Rodney Johnson. He helped create George Washington University's Office of Parent Services. The office was one of the first of its kind back in the early 90s. Today, about 30% of colleges have similar services to meet the growing involvement of parents. And more than 90% offer a specific orientation for parents of freshmen.
Our job is to do it in a positive way, is to say, Mom, Dad, you need to back off a little bit. Let your sons and daughter take care of this.
About 15 calls and emails a day come through the office. That means about 2,500 calls a year from parents worried about Johnny's safety or Jane's roommate problems. But you would never know that talking to dozens of students on college campuses. Many of them cringed when I asked if they have helicopter parents. Oh no, they say, my parents don't hover. They just really care about what's going on in my life. Senior Doug Brehm at George Washington University was one of the very few students to admit knocking on mom and dad's door only for a reason.
If I need some money or whatever, if I need his signature.
Back at the Dawson's house, Julia Scott's mother, Robin, shows me her Facebook profile.
I'm friends with my daughter on Facebook. I'm friends with most of her friends on Facebook. She's friends with most of my friends on Facebook.
A generation ago, it wasn't that easy for parents to keep in touch with their children. No Facebook, and cell phones were rare. Back then, students waited turns to make weekly collect calls home. Of course, snail mail was always an option, too.
One thing that's different about the generation of parents and kids today is they grew up, for the most part, liking one another. And I think that's different than, say, the baby boomers who grew up rebelling against their parents.
That's American University professor John Gould. He recently published a book called How to Succeed in College While Really Trying. He says changes in communication technology have simply made for healthier parent-child relationships. And that makes moms like Robin Dawson happy. She can't imagine a world that doesn't involve constant contact with her kid.
I just love her, and I love having time with her, and it's going to make me cry.
But Robin insists she is not a helicopter parent. More like the coach from the sidelines, she says, cheering on her daughter. Rima Grace, NPR News.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 25th of September, 2012. It's the birthday of the man who said, "Most men are a little better than their circumstances give them a chance to be." The novelist William Faulkner, born in New Albany, Mississippi, 1897. Like to get up early in the morning, eat eggs and broiled steak for breakfast, get a pot of coffee, take his tobacco and pipe, and go up to his study, where he went inside and took off the doorknob and carried it inside with him, where he wrote his novels by hand on large sheets of paper and then typed them out with two fingers on an old Underwood portable. In a 4-year span, he published some of his best works: Sartorus, The Sound and the Fury, As I Lay Dying, Sanctuary, and Light in August, all between 1929 and 1932. It was on this day, 1957, 9 African-American students were successfully registered at Little Rock Central High School, which had been segregated. They'd been chosen by the NAACP based on their good grades and their good behavior. Just weeks before, Governor Faubus of Arkansas had mobilized the National Guard to keep them from entering the school. The NAACP took the case to court, and President Eisenhower federalized the National Guard and sent federal troops to Little Rock to open the blockade. There was an angry mob that showed up. They heckled the students. They spat at them as members of the 101st Airborne escorted the kids through the front doors of the school. The 9 students were taunted and abused, humiliated for the rest of the school year. And it would be 15 years after that before all of Arkansas's schools would finally be integrated. In 1999, the original 9 students went to Washington and received the Congressional Gold Medal for their service. It's the birthday of the poet and cartoonist Shel Silverstein, born in Chicago, 1930. He said as a kid he